Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Drag Race Recap here on Reality TV Wrap Ups. I'm your host, Liana Boris, and boy, do we have a lot slash maybe not a lot to talk about, because we are going to be going over episode 9 of RuPaul's Drag Race season 13, as well as the COVID coronavirus episode, although there's not that much to say about it. If you didn't watch it, trust me, it's fine. You'll be fine. And then, of course, we'll touch on episodes from both episodes from UK, the one that we missed last week, and then the one from this week. That is the game plan. Now, I will not be playing that game alone. No, of course, we have our fabulous panel here for you today. First, let me welcome in a woman who has some thoughts on the coronavirus special, but we'll get to that later. That is Beth Dixon. Beth, how are you?
Doing well. I appreciated the moment where we were saying, are we going to touch on this or not? And Liana went, save your ranting. We have to give it this in the podcast. So yes, I do have thoughts, but I'm excited. It is missed you guys last week, so I'm happy to be back.
And also with us today is, of course, a man who just hit 1,000 followers on Twitch. So he's kind of a big deal. It is Amon Adwin. Amon, how are you?
Hi. Yeah, I'm great. This was, I feel like quite a lot happened over the past couple of weeks, but not quite a lot happened. So I think that was the perfect way to put it. But yeah, I'm excited to be back. We reached Snatch Game. I'm sure we'll have lots of stuff to talk about that as well. So yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I do wonder if they purposefully put this episode before Snatch Game, knowing like it's okay, people will be back because Snatch Game is next week. We can risk it here. It's not some other challenge that they don't care about, but conspiracy theories, no big deal. All right. So like I said, I think what makes the most sense is for us to go through the most recent episode. Okay. So we're going to talk about Snatch. We're going to talk about Miss Elliot with two T's finally going home. Her nine lives ran out. And then we'll get into a little bit of the COVID special and, of course, UK. So, okay, let's jump on in to this episode because obviously we had, I've heard a little bit of discussion about this, the double save, or is it the Candy Muse elimination and then recurring or
subsequent.
Bring back into the competition? Like this was not a double save. No, she was eliminated, Beth. And then she was just brought back into the competition. But regardless, we get the aftermath of all of this.
Yeah, she just skipped the plane ride home. I mean, it's not uncommon for RuPaul to be like, oh, this is one queen we just want to see back, whether it's next season or later on in the same season. He basically was like, all right, I'm not done with you. You're going to be the queen that we save and bring back this season. And you know what? I'm fine with it. I've come to terms with it. I hated it in the moment because I was like, this season is already 15 years long and we haven't gotten any queens really to leave at this point. Why are we doing a double save? Although not double save. So no, I'm fine with this. I'm happy to see more of Candy. Although to be honest, I kind of felt like she was bland in this episode. So what was the point was what I was kind of thinking. If you're not in the top in the following episode, or if you're not giving me something in the confessionals that's really funny, then like, what are you doing?
Why?
That's how I felt.
Yeah,
it definitely was not a triumphant return for her for this episode. I mean, I think she did fine. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, now that some time has gone by, I think that the rose-colored lenses that I was wearing for the whole double Shantae have shattered. Because this season is beginning to drag. Like, how many people do we have left now? Like,
15.
Eight.
We still have eight people left. And that
eight
this
queens
was
left.
This was episode 9.
Can we also point out that UK started later, is already at Final Four, and is going to have like the finale like well before the end of this. Like that is telling you how long the US season is.
Yeah.
Which I know it has to do with VH1 ordering episodes and all that kind of stuff, blah, 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 blah. But
yeah,
at least
so the rumors, like we've been hearing that they've ordered more episodes than usual for this season, but I can't ever seem to find anything specifically saying how many. The only other episode that I can find is the one that's coming up next week, which would be episode 10. But then the list stops after that. So just how many episodes are we going for here? Because eight queens, and there's usually, 14 episodes? And one of those episodes is the reunion special. So that means really three episodes should be left after this one, which I guess could make sense if it's a final four. But I don't know.
Okay, so let's do the math. Okay, so next week we would go down to 7. The week after, we would go down to 6. Yes. The week after, we would go down to 5. The yes. week after, we would go down to 4.
Okay. That'd be episode 13.
So that's episode 13. Then episode 14 is that right?
Why is it, we go down to 4, then we have to do the final 4 episode, and then it's the reunion in the finale. So we have like 7 more episodes apparently left.
So that's 16 total episodes of the season. Why does it feel so much longer? When I say 16, I'm like, oh yeah, it's like normally 14, but it feels...
I honestly think it feels...
going home quick enough.
That's exactly it. That's my point. That was exactly how I felt as one of the two main reasons why I wasn't happy with Candy leaving. Because I sat back and I was like, you did 3 episodes with no eliminations to start off the season. And now we've only sent like, what, 3 or 4 girls home, and you're already doing a double Shantae and a lip sync that didn't really warrant it, to my opinion. Mm-hmm. And it comes across like you saved Candy because of her personality and not her talent, which is, I think, a slap in the face to her talent. So like that was why I kind of felt that. I still have those feelings, but I'm a little bit more at ease with it this now.
Well, look, we're past it. We're here for the ride. All right. As long as that ride may be, are we going to get a little bored sitting in the back seat? Perhaps. But you know what? Mm-hmm. That's okay. Because Rue is wearing a Good and Plenty looking freaking suit in this episode. And so maybe we can munch on some candy as well. Because we get the next day in the workroom for the mini challenge where they have to audition for the band, the Pantyhose. Okay, get a little punk going on here. And then, Amon, RuPaul herself performs.
Yeah, I mean, I call this mini challenge the let's remind RuPaul of the good old days challenge, because that's all this really seemed to be. Yeah, I mean, he's had his own 80s rock band. I mean, we've heard plenty about it over the time. That he's been, you know, since he's had the show. And so, I mean, if you could remind him of his heyday and give him his 80s glam oats, then you were going to win this challenge. And I think it's funny that the oldest queen in the bunch was able to do that for him.
Well, I think I think it's actually kind of cool, right? So this is, I didn't think this was extraordinary as mini challenges, but at least they weren't pretending to be babies or cats or something like that. Like, I'm here for this over that kind of stuff. I do appreciate the nod to RuPaul's personal history. This, you know, RuPaul found drag through punk, becoming a punk musician, and then was like, it'd be punk if I dressed more androgynous or as a woman, or, you know, something that didn't define his gender roles. And then he was like, oh, I can be a drag queen. And so I think that that's a really cool history lesson to have in there, and that it, you know, drag, it has always had a political statement to it. And in this case, it was through punk music. So I appreciated that nod. My favorite part, though, was clearly what I love is when RuPaul gets up to perform, he doesn't know the words to his own song. And that's my favorite thing. He's like,
oh, she doesn't know the words.
It's just my favorite thing. It's one of my favorite memes about RuPaul is that RuPaul has no memory of anything. Like, not even Michelle Visage, who is like, Michelle, you're my best friend in the entire world. I forgot what your kids' names are. And they're like 20 years old, but we're best friends. What's her name again? Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, God, that's my favorite thing.
Yeah, this I think this combined then with the disco challenge, this is like, look, Rue, what do you want to do to remember your history? Come up with some ideas. We'll figure out how to incorporate it into the show.
He was supposed to have his own show, like an autobiographical show, like in the similar vein of like Pose, like directed by J.J. Abrams. And then it just never happened. So I guess he's just forced to live it out on the mini challenges.
This is it. I mean, come on, executive producer. I to be honest, in terms of just the actual mini challenge itself, was I entertained? Not really. But it was fine. Yeah, exactly. Like it was all right. It was fine. It was, you know, you got to see some queens being goofy, throwing themselves around on the stage, which is always entertaining and in some capacity. And yes, as Amon pointed out, we have Tina Burner win the mini challenge here. And Tina Burner, yeah, doesn't earn anything in terms of the challenge, but does get a cash prize from the whatever the pantyhose sponsor was, Snag Tights. So good for you, Tina. All right. But the main thing of this episode, of course, is the snatch in the room. That's right. It is snatch game. And so we get a lot of the setup in the workroom with the walkthrough. We get a little preview of some of the characters that we're going to see the queens portray. Beth, was there anything from this workroom walkthrough kind of part of the show that you thought was interesting?
Yeah, the biggest red flag in the room, besides Utica's squirrel fro, was, listen, RuPaul will tell you straight up if he likes an idea or not. RuPaul did not like the idea for Elliot to take on Rue McClanahan. That's an earned last name.
Yeah, Rue McClanahan. Yeah.
Yeah, I just, it sounded wrong when I said it. I was like, okay. No, but like, I just, if you are somebody who is known to be comedic and great with improv and like can get into character, then great. But you haven't proven that so far. So maybe listen to what Rue is saying. This is like, you don't mess with a few things, right? You don't mess with the Golden Girls and you don't mess with Diana Ross. Like when you're on Drag Race or, you know, Judge Judy, but let's be honest, Bianca Del Rio is the only person who could do Judge Judy. Mm-hmm. Those are the personal references that RuPaul is going to put on such a high pedestal that if you can't reach the pedestal, which like 1% of people can, it's not worth doing. So I really wish that like the red flags and like RuPaul really being like, can you do this? I mean, you got to make me laugh. And just thinking about that would have been taken into consideration.
Elliot. What a one.
I just feel like everybody's trying to be Gigi Good now. Like, everybody is trying to have their, I understand your concerns, I do not have the same concerns moment. And like, mm-hmm. not everybody's going to be able to do that. And keep in mind that Gigi Good did a robot that you can pretty much put any kind of personality on the robot sure. that you want, as long as you move like this and you talk like this. And then whenever you say the word bitch, it seems funny because you are a robot. But Blanche Devereaux, Rue McClanahan, whoever, any one of those Golden Girls are not the robot. So you're really going to have to do your homework, know your references, be able to pick up on any kind of like lines. Like there's so many classic lines from Golden Girls as I understand it. I've never watched Golden Girls, but even I know that there's so much that you can pull from that show. So unless you're like a student of it, it's really going to be, it's going to fall flat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Totally. Well, and I think the difference between Simone being like, I'm going to do Harriet Tubman, and RuPaul being like, well, you know, like, how are you sure you can make her funny? That to me is a very different critique from like, seriously, don't do this, which is what it felt like Rue was trying to tell to Elliot with two T's, right?
There's
like a little bit of a difference between the two. And I do think that Bob Ross could have been a good choice, like fundamentally.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Whereas I feel like any one of the Golden Girls or those types of iconic characters is just not a good choice kind of regardless. Unless you are Alaska, Bianca Del Rio, one of those like top tier queens that could really like, make it funny.
You just know that you're going to be able to kill it. Yeah,
exactly. Or you've practiced it before and like you really have it down. So, it's always brutal when you hear the look, I'm questioning your decision, because it's always going to go one of two ways. I mean, either they're going to be fabulous or it's going to really suck. So.
Utica, like when I saw that squirrel fro, I was like, oh, that's an interesting, you know, maybe she's just trying to be like more naturalistic because that's the kind of environment that Bob Ross will paint.
And didn't he have a pet squirrel?
He had a pet squirrel and it was his little squirrel friends, right?
Yeah,
that
so
was like the thing.
Exactly. I was like, so that this makes perfect sense. Like, I was expecting her to go that route. But then she's like, oh, yeah, power to the people. I'm not trying to disrespect anybody. I'm like, oh, no.
A great conversation to have on national television, right? This is an important conversation about, you know, appropriating Black culture through hairstyles and those kind of things. It's not just about fros. It's also about dreadlocks. It's about, you know, these, you know, slicking down baby hairs, whatever it is, right? Like those are the things that is an important conversation to have. But with a character like Bob Ross, like that was Bob's hair. Like
he has an afro.
He has an afro.
White people have afros. Not a lot of them do, but some of them do. And if you're going to do a guy that has a fro, and have the fro.
Then
and
just like, have the fro.
And then she said, you know, it has to be, you know, natural. It has to be, you know, more, I just wouldn't feel comfortable putting it on. I'm like, there are plenty of fros with red hair. Just find a wig and put it on. You don't have to tease it out yourself. No one is telling that you have to go down to the local hair store in somebody's hood and pick up all these hair care products. And we're not asking you to do that. Just put on a wig. Like, we're not going to come for you because you're trying to be Bob Ross. Bob Ross had a fro. Don't outwork yourself out of this competition.
Just don't be Bob Ross. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like for Utica, like, I understand the connection of, like, wanting to be Bob Ross, but there's no reason to be Bob Ross in the Snatch Game if you're going to, like, go the Utica route. Like, it would have been she would have been better served with a character like Katya's Bjork or someone who's, way off the walls kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, I think that I want to go back to the whole afro discussion real quick first, because she knows she's going to go on national TV, and if she in any way maybe feels comfortable or uncomfortable mm-hmm. with that decision, then one, yes, either switch characters, because I think we can come up with some characters that would have been better suited to her natural personality. But fine, let's say she still wants to go ahead with Bob Ross. Mm-hmm. I actually was totally okay with the squirrel fro thing, but then you have make a joke about it, or like, because it is still part of Bob Ross, but then it needs to sort of become part of it of like, oh, Bob Ross has been living under a rock or whatever for a certain amount of time, and now the squirrels have infested his hair or something. Perfect. But then it tells a story. It's like part of it. It is, there's an explanation there apart from just
you bring the audience into it. Yeah,
exactly. Because that can be part of your reason for doing it. But also then if you're going to not do the fro, then you have to have a justification for why you're doing the other thing. And then it's part of the story.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. The whole I was like, Bjork, this is exactly the weird, the spread. Well, we'll get into each of the performances, but all of the little things that Bob Ross was doing, if she did it as Bjork, that's the shoving the card in your mouth, chewing it up and spitting it out. It's that sort of weird eccentric behavior that fits a different character. And as Gottmik, our resident Bob Ross expert, could tell you, is not Bob Ross.
It's so true. And you know what I wish she would have done was Ivana Lynch playing Luna Lovegood. Like, that's the kind of thing I wish he would have done, which is just like, you can't do a trademark character, which is, you know, why we have Rue McClanahan versus Blanche. You know, it's so much like, you just go that route. I don't know. Like, if I were to do Snatch Game, and I know I would have to work on this a little bit more, it's not like I could just do it today, I would be Megan Mullally as Karen Walker from Will and Grace. Like, that, because it's like a perfect kind of like, you can respond to anything. You're like, oh, honey, like whatever, like have a bottle of vodka, but it's really water. Just chug it, do pills, talk. I mean, you have things that you could be doing, right? With someone who's so off the walls, like Luna Lovegood is in like the Harry Potter series. Now, granted, there's a lot of controversy with Harry Potter and the trans community and that kind of thing. So I understand that that's like maybe not a really good move to go. But I just feel like there are characters that are whimsical and weird and different and have a different point of view that like she could identify with that would be way better than someone like Bob Ross, who, while he is different, he's so soft spoken and that it's hard to make that funny unless you have the right skill set to do so.
All right. Well, let's just go ahead and jump on into each one of these characters. And then if there's anything from, you know, the pre-show and the workroom, we can, of course, mention that as well. So let's start with the queen who we had talked about a little bit before that Rue was like, are you sure? And that is Simone, who did Harriet Tubman. Amon, what was your impression of Simone here?
Yeah, so I was a little afraid for Simone as well, because, I mean, you do want to walk that line between comedy and total desecration, right? And so I was like, unless you are somebody like Octavia Spencer, who played Harriet Tubman in an episode of Drunk History, was hilarious, or someone like a writer like Aaron Magruder, who's the guy behind the Boondock series, who is very, very talented at creating satire surrounding Black culture and Black history. I was like, I don't really know if this is going to be the thing for you, because while I am Black, I do also have a sense of humor. So am I about to, like, you know, have my pitchforks ready to crucify Simone for trying to bring some humor to a very serious and austere and important figure in our history? No, but at the same time, I'm not here for the disrespect. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, I think she did okay. A lot of people were surprised that she wasn't in the top. I don't think that she deserved to be in the top. Like I said before, you need to be Erin Magruder. You need to be Octavia Spencer. You need to be in that lane, or it's just a no-go for me. What I got from Simone was literally Jennifer Lewis being Harriet Simone Tubman. Being mm-hmm. Harriet Tubman. Yeah. Like that. Like that's what I got. You know what I mean? I didn't really get it. I got some of the references. I think that she missed out on the total cue that she set up for herself at the top of the show, but she doesn't even appear at the seat. And then she comes up with her little lantern, and then RuPaul's like, oh, what's going on? Where were you? And then she says, oh, it's the white people. I said, girl, that's the perfect time for you to have a pickaxe and be like, I'm coming up from the Underground Railroad.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm like, what are you? Come on. Like, so yeah. I think there were definitely a lot of references that she kind of missed out on. And she kind of just went the route of like, oh, let me just have a little bit more banter with RuPaul, throw a racism joke in there here and there. But I'm just going to keep this banter with RuPaul going. And I was like, okay, but where's Harriet? Like, you're funny. You look like her, but I'm not getting any. I need more satire. I need more sarcasm. I need more like Harriet Tubman was a bad bitch. Like, she was ready to kill you if you were about to give up anybody's spot. Like, I wanted more mm-hmm. of that energy. But I just kind of got like more like, yeah, like Jennifer Lewis. So I don't agree with the people that were saying that she should have been the top. That was not a good Harriet. It was serviceable at best for me.
Mm-hmm. You know, you've kind of convinced me here, because I was somebody that between her performance and her runway, which was such a like powerful message, I felt like she mm-hmm. should have been in the top. But now mm-hmm. that you've said that, I'm like, actually, you're 100% right. Cause I had those reservations as well, where I sat back and I was like, I'm not really, mm-hmm. there have been people who have done, or even just look at Rosé, who did Mary Queen of Scots. Like, there are people who are playing historical characters or characters that mm-hmm. like they're doing really not them. It's a caricature of that character, and they've done really well. But was it enough to surpass the other top three? Not so yeah. much, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, there were definitely funny moments. Like, she definitely sure. made Ru laugh. But like, when we're talking, which I guess is like the ultimate, I mean, that's the ultimate goal. Like, as long as you can make him laugh, then I guess it really doesn't matter. But like, if I'm critiquing them as a whole and other characters that I saw other people do, her Harriet Tubman was not as strong as Mary Queen of Scots, nor was it yeah. as strong as Paris Hilton, nor was it as strong as I venture to say, Jonathan Van Ness. So yeah, she yeah. kind of, yeah. She
no, I totally, I totally agree.
I think for me, I was definitely in the Beth category, for sure, especially because of the runway. I felt like for me, it was close between Jonathan Van Ness, so Denali and Simone. And I mm-hmm. thought that the runway would maybe push her up into the category. But then on the rewatch, it was like the Jennifer Lewis, Jennifer Lawrence joke wasn't even planned. Like, I'm happy she was able to roll with it, but it was like mm-hmm. she messed up her actresses, and then that was one of the highlights of her performance. Mm-hmm. So if that's one of the highlights, then it does make me question the actual true, like, Harriet Tubman references that were going to be in there.
Yeah.
And exactly, big same. I was like, the fact that I didn't hear the words Underground Railroad.
Like, where?
Where was at least? It? Come on. Yeah, exactly.
Did she even mention slavery?
Not
she talked
really.
About racism, but she never talked about like escaping, you know, slavery or anything like that, too.
I wonder if maybe it's an editing thing. Maybe because RuPaul had the reservations, production right. probably also had the reservations. So if there, we know that we don't see everything in Snatch Game. So there probably were a few more things that she said in there that VH1 was probably like,
yeah.
Let's just walk a fine line here, which ultimately Simone was like, I don't want you guys to be concerned, because I'm, you know, like once again, trying to have her Gigi Good moment. Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily know if VH1 backed her up on all of those. So you probably didn't see everything. So this could be a bit of an editing thing. But at the same time, I feel like if RuPaul was laughing his ass off at the jokes that we didn't see, they probably would have put them in. So I'm going to venture to say that I think that she did a okay job, you know, mm-hmm. like, and yeah. that was it.
Well, and part of me also does wonder if this is like sort of maybe, I don't know if protecting her with the edit is like the mm-hmm. right thing, but if it's like, look, we're going to show her doing well. So just so you guys know, like, yeah, she didn't make the top, but she's doing well in the competition. Like, just yeah. in right. case you had a question about it, don't right. worry. Simone
don't
is
get
here
it
to play.
Twisted.
Yeah. Like, even though she took a risk, because that's the thing, is that in the, you know, the workroom stuff, it's like, there's this setup of, ooh, you know, what's going to happen? You're going to take this big risk. And for the other two, Elliot and Utica, they get in the bottom. So we get the critiques. So I don't know. I'm happy.
It just reminded me so much of, and I tweeted this earlier, it reminded me so much of Viola Davis when she became the first Black woman to win the Emmy for Best Actress in a Drama Series for How to Get Away with Murder. And she starts off her speech saying, in my mind, I see a field of beautiful flowers and meadows and everything and beautiful white women with their arms outstretched to me. And I just can't seem to get over that line. I can't seem to get there. And everybody's like, in the audience is like, and then she's like, that was Harriet Tubman in the 1800s. And the only difference between women of color and white women in Hollywood is like opportunity. And then it was like, oh, okay, we get it. Yes, Viola, yes. I'm like, that's the moment that like I really wanted to see from Simone. Mm-hmm. And I felt like she didn't get over that line. She kind of just was rode the middle the entire time.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, let's move on to our winning queen this week, Miss Gottmik, who portrayed Paris Hilton. Beth, what'd you think?
That was hot.
It was so hot.
No, I thought it was really good. I don't know if you guys were like me. I watched The Simple Life when it was on. And like, because I was a teenager at the time. I was in high school when it came out, or maybe middle school, but I was definitely in high school. And I just remember her trying to trademark the phrase that's hot, like all these different kinds of things. And I just love all the little references that she was able to like slip in there. Even some of them upon the rewatch, I was like, oh my God, I didn't even catch that the first time around. She really did a good job of taking somebody who has kind of an iconic voice and just like a valet girl kind of vibe and just being able to say whatever you want with this. And just like, it was perfect. And I really, I thought she was quick. She was funny. And she chose a character that it was kind of easy to poke fun of, but in a way that was still kind of respectful of who Paris Hilton is. Because as we saw at the end, Gottmik still wants to paint her face and make sure that you don't like completely burn that bridge. But I thought it was fun. It was a lot of fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. It was, Amon, it was definitely like Gottmik wasn't the top of my list for who I think is going to super excel at the Snatch Game. So I was really pleasantly surprised with her performance.
Gottmik, man, like she was not somebody that I was really that gung ho about coming into this season. I mean, I knew that she had made a name for herself, around Hollywood and everything. And she was very popular and also being, you know, one of the few trans people that have been on the show. Like there was just so much buzz around her, but like I never really got like front runner energy from her. But this is her second challenge win, so I'm really starting to think that, man, like I'm glad that this is not like going to be a run to the end for Simone. And then Olivia has a couple challenges in there too. Rosé is probably going to get one more up in here. Like it's like this is looking pretty even as we get towards the end of this season. And yeah, I enjoyed the Paris Hilton. I am someone that doesn't really know too much about Paris Hilton. I think the longest amount of time that I spent with Paris Hilton, excuse me.
Very different.
Do not come for me, Swifties, because I don't give a damn. Anyway, the longest amount of time that I spent with Paris Hilton was probably watching her show where she was looking for a new best friend. Oh, and it was like an elimination style reality show. And whenever you got eliminated, like she would like delete your number and then say TTYN, talk to you never. It was like this whole thing. I love that show. So I got that, you know, energy from her. And like I love the fact that she sort of like made a joke that it was kind of like all an act and that Paris doesn't actually act like that. She just acted like that for the cameras. I thought that that was a nice touch. It kind of like humanized her. And you're never really looking for people to humanize people in the Snatch Game, but she kind of like made me want to look up, I keep wanting to say Taylor Swift. Oh my God, Paris Hilton.
Oh, no.
She made me want to look up Paris Hilton a lot more. My mentions are about to be shattered in the episode's release.
Cancel them on.
I thought that she was fun. I thought that she always had something to say. She was quick. She made RuPaul laugh. I think she made RuPaul laugh the hardest out of anybody. So yeah, I thought she did a good job.
It felt so effortless also, which, you know, look, queens are going to have canned responses, but hers never really felt that forced. And mm-hmm. she just had this sort of natural embodiment of the character. So one, I think knowing Paris Hilton, I'm sure was very helpful. But two, she just picked somebody who really matched so well with her, I think, natural demeanor and voice. And she had all of it together. So I very impressed, very surprised that Gottmik was did so well. But mm-hmm. I went back to look at our rankings. You know, we did have her like 3, 4, and 3 is where we kind of ranked her. So we did have her near the top. But I think these little things, to Aman's point, is kind of what's pushing her up into that like 1-2 level.
Yeah.
Because she was always...
Snatch Game is a big one. That's yes, a big win.
Exactly. And, you know, not that we... Evie Oddly, Brooklyn Heights, we see queens who fail that can still be successful, but this is this is very important for your resume to have this. Yeah. And it shows that she's more diverse in her performance ability. The one thing that's I still have in the back of my mind for her in terms of her ability to win is that lip sync that we saw. Look, the queens were unprepared in the first week of the competition. They didn't know that they were going to come in and lip sync, but I felt like her performance was not particularly strong. And so I always have this in the back of my mind if lip syncing is going to be the thing that makes the ultimate decision in terms of the winner. So that's like the only little thing especially, that's in there.
Especially if you're going to go up against the other front runners that we've seen so far. Like, you know, we have seen... who are the other upfront runners that we're saying? Simone, Olivia, Rosé. So Rosé is the only one out of those four that didn't win the initial lip sync.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to go up specifically, if you're going to go up against a Simone or an Olivia or somebody who I felt like did a stronger job in the initial lip sync and their respective lip syncs, like that's something to keep in mind. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I will say the one thing that I really like about Gottmik, it's typically about this point in the competition that those that are front runners either start getting a little cocky or you can see the competition start to kind of get to them in some way. She has been consistent in not letting the competition diminish her spirit in any way. She's been very supportive of, you know, Denali when they had the Russian duo kind of thing. Like she was the one that kind of calmed her down and made her like focus and get fierce so that they could be in the top. You can see her, everything has been fun for her. And I think that that's mm-hmm. a really important concept to have in this competition. Like it's okay to flounder. And she's somebody that's just like, I'm having fun and I'm confident. So if I fail, like, okay, at least I had fun and I can learn something from it. And that is such a positive attitude to have. And I feel like those queens end up going really far in the competition traditionally too.
Yeah, I like that you said that because I was thinking about that earlier, just about like how, you know, reality TV is very produced and is very, you know, they are presenting an image to us. And as someone who has spent time trying to get on reality TV, I do have those conversations with myself. Like, do you really want to be like... all up with those producers and people like that really have no real interest in who you are as a person and just kind of put on a show. And it's probably not as glamorous as you think it is. Like the behind the scenes and the guts of the show is probably very, very like underhanded and sleazy and ugly. Like, am I going to get really disillusioned? And I'm very happy that with Drag Race, at least there are so many contestants that come through those workroom doors. And every time they leave, they're like so disappointed that they didn't get a chance to stay longer. And they really enjoyed the camaraderie with the girls. So that really, the fact that Drag Race, cause it definitely has had a lot of it's come under fire a lot of the time, but mm-hmm. I'm glad that there are so many contestants that really actually do want to be there and they're having a good time while they're there. Because I feel like if you're not having a good time, that's when the show is really going to just start to go under. So the fact that she and so many of the other performers are having a good time as they're filming makes me hopeful for the future of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so let's transition to another queen who I think is having a good time. But regardless, she is definitely a front runner in the competition, and that is Rosé. So Rosé here is Miss Mary Queen of Scots, which what did Candy keep calling her? Queen of Ireland or something?
Mm-hmm. Queen of Ireland.
And then she was like, I can't do that accent. And then didn't she say like it was Australian or something like that?
And I was like, Ireland accent.
The Ireland accent. Oh my God. I was like, girl, get a map, get a history book, please, for the love of God.
The producer was like, Scottish accent. I was like, no, before you move on to Scottish, make sure that she understands that it's an Irish accent first and how that is different from a Scottish accent.
Ireland accent. Oh gosh. Oh, Candy, thank you for the moment though. Like, we needed that moment. It was so funny.
She was like, oh, okay, well, whatever.
And she's like, Scottish? All right, whatever. You know, after COVID, these queens are going to be able to travel and have all that experience. I don't know if Candy's had the opportunity to go to Scotland or Ireland or whatever. So I'm sure that soon enough she's going to be able to have.
I totally want a whole vlog series of Rosé taking Candy to Scotland and exposing her to all of the stuff that's over there.
Wow Presents. If you don't make this series right now.
Okay, and then they meet up with Ellie Diamond and Lawrence Janet.
Lawrence Janet.
And then they can all go on adventures together. I think this really just writes itself. I mean, what was that stupid Vegas show they did? Come on, we need this instead.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Obviously. Put this in Glasgow. Come on, it'll be great.
Mm-hmm. Glasgow. All right, well, speaking of, let's circle back to Miss Mary Queen of Scots. I think Rosé's performance, Amon, really made me laugh the most. I don't know if it was because of the accent and I couldn't understand part of it, but it was just so silly. I really enjoyed this.
So I watched it the first time whenever she asks her that question about how's your head, and she's like, I've got a lot of complaints, and really went into this monologue. I thought at first that no, we literally just couldn't understand what she was saying, but she said something. But no, when I watched it for the second time, I was like, oh no, she literally just started saying gibberish, but it sounded as if she actually was saying something that we could. I don't know how she did that, because if somebody asks me to speak gibberish, it's kind of hard to do that on cue. Like, I can start saying real words at some point. At least I do. So the fact that she was able to do that, I was like, wow, like, I want to understand what you're saying, but you're literally not making sense on purpose. I thought that that was hilarious. So I think she did a great job. Some of the answers were a little, but she tried to have like a little banter moment with Olivia as, oh my goodness, what's her name?
Tabitha Brown.
There it is. And that one kind of was a little for me, but she
said Apple, and I was like, okay,
yeah,
this doesn't make sense. Whatever.
Yeah. But I thought that she was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I am so thankful that I watched these on Friday nights with subtitles on, because that just really helped not only understand what was happening, but like, I just loved everything that she was coming up with. I also love the fact that her Scottish accent was one that is considered a lower class, like, Scottish accent. So to have a queen with a lower class accent, I just thought that was really funny. And there's like little subliminal things here and there that made it hysterical. Yes, there were some historical references, but for the most part, even if you didn't know who Mary Queen of Scots was, like, you laughed and you had a good time. We've seen that multiple times. If there's either a cultural or historical figure that you don't know much about, if there's a queen that can kind of bring you in and teach you a little bit about who they are, while also just having a lot of fun with it, it can be a huge success in the Snatch Game. Mm-hmm. Rosé also had like my favorite line of the entire show, which is in the very beginning, where she goes, I thought I was going to come into this competition and like absolutely slay it. And I didn't. I've been singing, I didn't, for like the past few days, just going around like, did I do my auditions? I didn't. Like, oh, I love her.
Yeah, I really like her too. And I think the choice also is a smart choice. I mean, so first of all, yeah, of course, her Scottish heritage. And so that like fits in the fact she's born there, all that jazz. But I think that that type of historical character is just a slam dunk to do, because you can kind of make up whatever crazy fun personality you want. And then you have a few historical references here or there, but that's it. Like, what if you did Cleopatra, for example? You can be like whatever bad bitch you want, pick whatever accent you want, right? Who cares? Just make a Mark Anthony joke, make an asp joke, getting bit on the boobies, make a pyramid joke, done. You know what I mean? Like, well, and then I got involved in that pyramid scheme. You know, I don't know, like, whatever you want to do, you can fit that so easily. Whereas if you pick somebody who is maybe more recent, I think that's more challenging, or can be more challenging. So anyway, love it. Loved her performance. I definitely thought it was a lot of fun. Okay, speaking of someone who is more recent, we're going to talk about Tina Burner doing Richard Simmons. Beth, what did you think about Tina? I mean, yeah, I know, right?
I mean, okay. This is in no way, I'm just fascinated by this. This is in no way like me body shaming. How can she look so like sturdy and strong and like buff on the shoulders and such in the MC outfit, and then as Richard Simmons looks so slender? Like, I thought that was so interesting. I was like, when do you want to switch this? Anyway, I also love that Utica is sitting there being like, oh, I don't want to wear a fro. And Richard Simmons doesn't have quite a fro, but it's pretty damn close. And the Tina's there literally right above her wearing like this kind of curly hair borderline fro for Richard Simmons. It was safe. It was fine. I didn't laugh, but I didn't cringe.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Other queens took the cringe factor away.
So I just don't know what's going on with Tina Burner. I'm cold. I'm not burning for you, Tina. It's not. She started off so strong. At least I thought she was going to start off so strong. And her DRs were all over the place. She was narrating the season. And now as the time has progressed, she has really just begun to shrink and shrink and shrink. And I don't know if there is some big comeback that's on the horizon for her. I mean, she's going to need it, because at this point there are people with two wins and you have zero.
Yeah.
You're not rising to the top in challenges that are supposed to be in your wheelhouse. Like, I mean, Candy said it best. Like, she was like, back home, she's like the girl to beat, and here she's just sort of like skating by. I mean,
it's just interesting, like, Denali too. I've seen quite a few different people post about her and say, like, she's like my hometown queen. Like, I go out specifically to watch Tina, and she's
okay. Good, we saw the same TikTok. Yes,
yeah. Was that the one that says like she doesn't wear any of those colors or whatever? Yeah. So there was that one, and then there was another one that said like, she's also like not this like shady for the purposes of just being shady. Like, she's off the cuff shady as a response reactive, not like proactively like, oh, I need to make myself a storyline. So it's almost like being in front of the cameras and trying to do some self-producing has actually hindered her. Whereas some people, it really lifts them up. And that's great. I think specifically when you think of shows like Big Brother or Survivor, if you know that you're going to play a game in a villainous way, why not own that? Why not self-produce and do that kind of thing? But in Drag Race, if you aren't backing up your villainous shadiness, and like, I'm a drag queen, so that means I can be bitchy. Like, if you aren't backing that up with wins and skills, like, you're just coming off as a bitchy, like, underperforming queen. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm not saying that she's bitchy, but I'm saying that she's trying to be bitchy. And I'm like, it's not really paying.
We haven't heard anything from the Mean Girls also. Like, it was like that happened as a thing, and now apparently we're just not gonna, like, it's not a thing anymore. I don't know. Is it gonna come back later at some point?
It's weird.
I have no idea. I think for me, for Tina's performance, it was exactly what you said, Beth. It wasn't good. It wasn't bad. It was just there. But I didn't laugh at it. And I don't remember anything she said that was funny. So if there weren't other queens that actively made me cringe, then yes, she should have been in the bottom. And I wonder if that Candy confessional that Amon was alluding to, now that LEO2Ts is gone, I'm like, all right, who's my next target? Like, in thinking of who's going to go home. And I mean, a target's got red on it. And Miss Tina Burner loves to wear red. Hey.
Maybe not though, because the episode or next week is the Freaky Friday episode where they're supposed to switch bodies or whatever, and she's really good at doing the red and orange thing. So if she can make somebody else look good, then maybe she'll stay.
Okay,
that should be the challenge that she wins. That should totally be the challenge.
No, I think Utica's got that over her. I think Utica can actually do like some fun painting, and I'm not convinced that Utica's next. with this.
The makeover challenge.
Utica's wheelhouse has been so far in aesthetics.
Well, she can sew too also. So if she was to make an outfit for someone else, that might be okay.
But no, I agree though, Leona. I think that she's looking to be not much longer for this world. And I remember at the top of the season, I was like, I'm excited for her because I feel like she has such a strong reputation. And I feel like we hear that about a lot of the girls. So I feel like that's becoming like the new preseason no-no for Drag Race. How like a Big Brother, like when you start, you know, getting all of these interpretations off of those little videos that you see, like, oh yeah, they're going to be great. I feel like having a reputation before Drag Race don't mean shit anymore, because we have seen time and time again how these queens just come on this show and then they just flail out and they spiral out and then it's just not good. And not to say that that's what Tina Burner is doing, but she's just not delivering in the way that I thought that she was going to, or production just does not like her. She must have did something to production between episode 3 to now, because the DRs have been declining. Her general like time among the episodes is declining. She barely gets any airtime during the Untucks anymore. It's just like,
yeah,
who did you piss off, girl? What happened?
She's a perfect example of remembering that there are queens who are excellent at drag, but not good at Drag Race. Yeah. And there are queens that are really good at Drag Race and are not as compelling to see in person. And I think that she is somebody, I've seen her in person, both performing and then like when she was just in the crowd supporting other queens. And she's someone who's obviously like a staple in the drag community, not just in her performing sense, but how she supports others. So this might just not be her platform.
I liked her Jennifer Lawrence. I mean, RuPaul, Jennifer Lawrence. Oh my God. Jennifer Coolidge.
Oh my God. Why did I say Saundra? Oh my gosh.
I didn't remember hers.
I like the little bit of Jennifer Coolidge that we got, but RuPaul was being shady and saying that he didn't remember it in the.
I don't remember yours.
Yeah.
Which is funny because, like, what you audition with doesn't mean that that's what you're going to do and prepare and such, you know, like.
I'm wondering about that for in terms of like Olivia, because like if they send in a couple of characters that they're going to do.
Well, did you know what Olivia's was supposed to be? She was supposed to be Rachel Dolezal and they said, no, you're not doing that. So that's why she had that same wig. And then she went for Tabitha Brown because she was like, similar hair.
So when did they veto? I guess they vetoed it before she got there.
I don't know if it's before she got there or while they were on set deciding like when they were saying what they were going to do.
If they vetoed it on set, that's so shitty. Like, why would you wait that long? You knew that was literally in her wheelhouse if she sent in the video.
And that's what I think is interesting too, because there's other, like, Trixie is probably one of the other most infamous ones. It's like there's the conspiracy theory that she was eliminated in that lip sync against Pearl because she had auditioned as Anne Frank for her Snatch Game. And she promised that she wasn't going to bring her or anything like that, but production was nervous. So like they got rid of her, which I don't know if that's necessarily true. But I just, there are these kind of conspiracies of like, oh my gosh, you were really funny in your audition. We're really scared that you're going to do this person. That's going to be controversial. I don't know when they tell the queens not to do that. I know, I think in this conspiracy, or at least that Trixie was told ahead of time. I don't know. And again, even though I play video games with Trixie Mattel, this is not something I've ever discussed with her. So like, this is not like from the horse's mouth kind of thing.
Beth,
this is
just get the scoop. What are you doing?
I'm going to be playing Dead by Daylight. Like, okay, so now that you're on the hook, let me just ask, send you home against Pearl? Because,
oh my God. Yeah, no, that's okay. Don't jeopardize your standing for us.
I'd be like, oh, fuck off.
I mean, would love to know though. Just stuff. All right. Okay. So let's move on. Let's talk about Candy, who played Patrick Starr here, who I felt was Candy being Candy.
Okay. Does she know who Patrick Starr is? First of all, this is what angered me about having her here. Like, come kill it. I had originally heard rumors that she was going to be, what's the TikTok? I can't think of Rosie, whatever. I can't think of
the name. That would have been good. Rosie. Yes,
that's Rosie.
Yeah. That would have been great. Because it could have
been right up her wheelhouse. It would have been amazing. And I can't think of the name, but like,
and she literally could have been herself and it would have, exactly. I would have laughed. I would have been like, you're doing it. This is an easy one for you. But like, because I get the reference, I would have been like, okay, fine, whatever. That would have been funny.
It would have been funny. It would have been fantastic. Blah, 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 blah. Patrick Starr, like, first of all, is not that funny. Like, I love Patrick. Nothing to do with makeup the entire time Candy's sitting there.
Yeah. The fact that Candy Muse had to put out a tweet saying that, no, guys, I was not being Patrick Starr from SpongeBob, should tell you that this choice...
I'm logging off. I didn't even see that. I'm logging off. That is...
I feel like that should tell you everything you need to know about how you did on Patrick game.
No, this is Patrick.
That would have been so funny.
That would have been better, to be honest. You should have been Patrick Starr.
Patrick from SpongeBob.
That would have been better.
Oh, God.
They might have been on to something, Candy, while you dragging people in your mentions. They might have been on to something while you jump into conclusions.
Should have thought that one through. Oh, my gosh. I mean, she's lucky she has a good personality that Rue likes because.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And she's lucky that the other queens crashed and burned. Looking at you, Elliot. So,
no, seriously, if one of those queens had done even slightly better, because we'll get to her runway too, but come on. Come on. Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. No.
Yeah, it was just it wasn't Patrick Starr. I don't remember anything really from it. I remember she ate the only thing I think that I genuinely like kind of chuckled at, but it was also a shock, like, was when she just ate the banana with the peel on the banana. Which also, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, how is that Patrick Starr? But also, like, what? Mm-hmm. In general, what did it taste like? I want to know. Was it gross? Inquiring minds want to know.
Just like what it came off as to me was making fun of Patrick's weight more than actually being Patrick. Because every joke was like, I'm hungry. And I was like, actually what she gave me was a lot of Stacey Lee Matthews being Monique in season 3 Snatch Game.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what it channeled. And I was like, this is not at all Patrick. Like, I don't get it. But anyway.
Anyway, well, let's move on to a queen who was in the bottom this week. That's right, Olivia as Tabitha Brown, although we found out that was obviously her second choice here. Aman, what did you think of her interpretation of Tabitha?
Meh. Like, I mean, I don't know much about Tabitha Brown. I mean, I've seen her videos here and there on TikTok or wherever else.
Well, you know more than RuPaul, who was like, straight up, I have no idea who this bitch is at all.
He literally said, oh, so she's not a celebrity, which I thought was so good.
That's a read.
Who's Tabitha? Has Tabitha said anything? I wonder. Somebody should check her social media.
Yeah, no, she did. She like tweeted a picture of her with the episode in the background. Saying, I can't remember exactly what she said, but she's definitely seen it.
Okay. Well, I mean, look, if she had a plan to be Rachel Dolezal before coming up in here and then it got scrapped and then she didn't have a lot for Tabitha, I mean, I feel like your backup should be just as good. You know, as your...
You should come to Drag Race with 2 backups that you're comfortable doing with.
Exactly.
Because if you get there and somebody else has the same character as you, do a backup that you're comfortable with. Mm-hmm. You get there and they poo-poo your idea, whatever. If something happens in the competition, say like another Trixie Mattel moment where you're forced to play that character that you wanted to do for Snatch Game in Trixie's case, Dolly Parton, for another challenge earlier, and now you're like, I can't be Dolly again. You have to have a backup. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to think of these things. So come with 3 things prepared. This is a job. Prepare for it.
I feel like, I mean, she ran into that problem that we've seen on Snatch Game before, where you're doing someone that's naturally funny, that doesn't necessarily have, like, if her thing is that she's a vegan chef online, that's not inherently funny. But the reason why she's famous online is because not only is she a vegan chef, but she has a personality to it. And so unless you're able to really duplicate that, you're not going to be able to really make anybody laugh, because there really isn't anything substantive there. Like, if Tabitha Brown were there being Tabitha Brown, we'd probably be laughing, but you're not Tabitha Brown. So it's just not, it's kind of like Jasmine Masters when she did her own stand-up for for the talent show. But like, there's a little bit of a difference between stand-up and internet meme culture. Like, totally. She tried to be herself as the meme.
Yes.
And like, No, that's not how it works. And I love her. I love her so much. But like, that just, no, it's not working. So she tried to be the meme, but it just, no.
Yeah, I think that the biggest issue that she had was Tabitha has like the number one saying that Tabitha says all the time, like, and you put as much of this on as you want because that's your business. Like, she's always like, because that's your business. No, there was none of her sayings, like, at all were sprinkled throughout it. Like, there was nothing that tied it back to her. She's also like always talk about her family. She's very family oriented. She's got a really cute husband, cute kids, that kind of thing.
Doesn't one of her daughters look just like her?
Yes. Like, I mean, there's so many things that you could do that would be like tying it all right back into like her family. So like, you know, bringing the fact that her husband's hot, like whatever. I mean, there's things that you could do to play with that and have it be fun. But Olivia's another person that I think, I mean, obviously she was in the bottom for this, but like, I could have easily seen her as being safe as well, just because she has such a smiley, bubbly personality. And it was basically just like a likable personality that she did. You know what I mean? Like, for her, she was lucky or wasn't as lucky because someone else didn't crash and burn harder, like for whatever reason. But like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I liked the one joke that she had about like the vegan ribs talking about.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the entire recipe, throwing it all in the trash. I thought that that was funny. But even RuPaul also didn't really laugh at that.
But that went against everything her character is.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, it would be funny if like, I mean, if that was the gag that she was trying to go for, that everything she's like, I'm a vegan, I'm a vegan, I'm a vegan. And then like, she's sitting there and like, here's belly meat or something like
that.
Yeah,
RuPaul
like,
kind of gave her that idea. RuPaul was totally. Like, I mean, are you going to have like sausages that you're going to be eating on the side? Like, is that going to be a thing? And
It just wasn't a clear characterization, regardless of what she was going to do. If she was going to do Tabitha Brown as Tabitha Brown, do that. If you're going to do sort of the behind the scenes, like, oh, it's actually fake, do that. But it was just references to lots of apples and bananas. And, you know, kind of like the judges said, it was just one note. It wasn't funny. Mm-hmm. And I was fine with her being in the bottom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's move on to our last queen that was in the top, and that is Denali, who did Jonathan Van Ness. Beth, what did you think here of Denali?
I think Denali had the best characterization altogether in terms of everything, constantly brushing the hair, honey, and just everything was so animated. And oh my God, like, there's so many JVN things that she was able to do to it. And like, JVN's a perfect kind of character if you're able to get into the physicality of the character, right? Mm-hmm. If you can't be playing with your hair and have your mustache and just be, you know, kind of animated the whole time and be giddy and like those kind of things, then like, that's not a good character for you. But Denali, I think, pulled it out really well. And JVN, if you get the physicality down, like I said, like, you can literally answer any question, you'll be fine. And just add a whole bunch of like Henny's and like, oh, that's so cute or whatever. I mean, like, talk about Antony's ass or whatever, and you're good. Like, you're golden. So I thought that she did a really good job. I think in another season where there were maybe a lot of stronger queens, maybe she wouldn't have been in the top. Just because I think it's, in comparison, like, not the most creative route to go in terms of trying to come up with a character, a very safe one to do. But in this season, with the competition she had, very much deserved to be in the top, in my opinion.
Yeah. I thought it was a perfect choice. I thought, you know, it's a layered role because it has so many references to gay culture, so many references to drag queen culture as well, with the crossover with Carson Kressley. Like, I thought like she just had like a plethora of like material to use, and it was one of those characters that I knew who it was before the name was even read, like before my brain even could come up with the name. I saw the hair, I saw the beard, I saw the mustache, I saw the black sweater, I saw the brush. I was like, oh, that's JVN. Like, so I thought that she had a lot of fun with it. I thought that she was quick. Some of the answers seemed just a little bit canned. You could tell that she had been practicing some of the responses. But like Beth just said, like, in comparison to what we had Like, I'm glad she was prepared because some of these queens were floundering. So give it to her.
I think take this character and take her performance, stick it in any season. She's at least safe.
Correct.
So if you're going to try to get through a drag race and, you know, go with something like this.
Yeah, she said she knows. She said that she wasn't good at acting, right? She said that she was scared for this challenge. So she chose, I think she chose, made a strategic choice in picking this character because, like you just said, put it anywhere, you're going to be fine.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I used to be kind of a stickler in my mind, and I think that this was part of me and the rest of, like, maybe the drag race community kind of growing as well, where, like, I wasn't mad at Kennedy Davenport for doing Little Richard because I was like, okay, like that's pretty much drag, right? You know, like whatever. But then I wasn't as big of a fan of the idea of Ben de la Creme I forgot what his name is, but doing just like a camp guy. Paul something.
What was his guy's name?
Oh my God.
From the
at my mentions. Excuse
me. Where? Okay, at us. But for me, I was like, okay, but that's just a gay man. Like he doesn't inherently do anything that's like playing with gender a little bit. So I had kind of an issue with that. But at the end of the day, like I understand, like you just got to go for a character at this point. Mm-hmm. Right. And I actually, what I love the most about doing a character like JVN is that JVN is non-binary. So having non-binary representation among this rather than just, it's either a really camp gay man or a cis woman or trans woman. Like it was really fun to kind of see a non-binary character represented on the Snatch Game for the first time and done so well too. So that was something I kind of clocked myself, or at least in my intro spect.
It was Paul Lind.
Thank you. Yes.
There we go.
Benelkram. Yeah, exactly.
I was thinking in my head Paul Lolly, and I knew that wasn't right.
And from Hollywood Squares also. That's that's a show.
Square show. What's this?
The square show. The one. The center square. You know.
Yeah.
All right. It's fine. In terms of exactly the characters, I honestly have like little preference. As long as it definitely feels something elevated, very drag. I kind of don't really care. And I'm happy a little bit more that the line is being blurred. And like Beth said, that we're getting more incorporation of different people and different characters. So, okay. Mm-hmm. We have to talk about this. We got to talk about Elliot.
Do we?
Elliot?
Probably covered it.
Yep. Okay, moving on. So Elliot chose Rue McClanahan, which she essentially did Blanche from the Golden Girls. I don't know how else this was supposed to be Rue McClanahan. Also, how is this supposed to be Blanche? Because it was one joke the whole time. It was... I like men. Company of a gentleman.
Love men.
Like, what type of men?
Men.
Yeah.
Men.
Okay.
What type is that?
Oh, my God.
Look, I was cracking up the whole time because of how bad it was.
Yeah. Okay, so
I thought by virtue of it being such a train wreck, I was like, is she gonna end up being safe? Because
it was so bad, it was safe.
Oh man.
Like, honestly, there's a part of it, like somebody who I think did so poorly that it worked was Alyssa Edwards in All Stars 2 Joan Crawford, right? Mm-hmm. But that's again, like that is someone who is just reciting lines from Mommy Dearest, which didn't even have her, and it's a representation of Joan Crawford. It's not even Joan Crawford herself. Like that's the best part about it, right? So if Elliot had done the same thing and actually just recited lines that maybe didn't make sense but were like somewhat funny, like that might have even been better than just saying the same joke over and over and over.
I feel like there was an opportunity for the Winnie the Pooh joke where they were like, Winnie the Pooh was like in the forest or something. And I was like, You could have thrown like a Christopher Robin joke in there somehow if you really wanted to talk about men or something like that. I don't know. It just felt
Where are the jokes?
Exactly. It was just so bad.
I need to go back to this, Simone. Christopher Robin is a child. What kind of joke are you making?
But I mean, with the Ewan McGregor playing him as an adult, you know.
Oh, okay.
I could get behind.
I'm sitting here thinking you're like making a men's joke, and I'm like, he's like 10. So maybe not.
I did have the original thought, but I was like, he's an adult as well now. And you know, with the newest live action films. So like, you could have done something. I don't know. It just was not.
But even the physicality, right? Blanche, out of all the Golden Girls, is incredibly physical. There's just a lot of shoulder movement, and she could have had the. There's that famous gif of her spraying herself and like that kind of to kind of cool herself down, and like what a she couldn't have been sat next to anybody more perfect than JVN, right? Like that, there could have been a lot of really fun banter. And the fact
that Bob Ross for that next to the men's.
And with Richard Simmons behind you. Woo! You know
what I mean? The men's.
What a wonderful, actually, that would have been really funny, right? It's not even about having the company of gentle men. It could have also been like, I also know that I'm a gay icon as I'm clearly surrounded by gay men. Like, I mean, like there could have been like, just reference other things, like
hit on Bob Ross. I don't know. Like,
I don't know. I would not have hit on Utica's Bob Ross. I would not have hit her. I would have been like,
it doesn't matter. It's just such a missed opportunity. It was so bad. It was comical in the sense that it was bad, like Amon mentioned. So at least it had that going for it.
Oh, goodness.
Whatever. Okay, finally, we of course have Bob Ross. So Utica plays Bob Ross. The only note I have is, what is she doing? Because apparently that was the only thing I felt worthy to write down when it came to the notes.
I was wearing a hoodie when I watched this, and I literally covered my face with it, and I could not watch anytime she was on screen. And like, it was like I was watching a horror movie where like you put your hands in front of your face, but you kind of peek with your eye. Yeah, like that was me. I suffered such intense secondhand embarrassment. Mm-hmm. I had cold chills because I was so embarrassed for her. Like I tweeted out, I think a lot of people misunderstood what I was saying, which is understandable, but I tweeted out, I think this is the cringiest Snatch Game since all of season, like the season 4 Snatch Game, I think is the worst one ever in history, in terms of overall performance. I literally mean like Utica herself rivaled that entire like panel of girls from season 4. It was really bad. And I love Utica. I love how quirky and whimsical, whatever creative she is. But this was just not it.
Yeah. Okay. So again, in the same way with Tabitha Brown, there are these phrases that you need to use if you are going to be Bob Ross. Happy little trees, you know, talking about your little pet friend. Apparently, I looked it up. His squirrel's name is Peapod. Okay. You're going to talk about Peapod the squirrel. You've got their like the little friends. The trees have their little friends. She just like had paintings already done on the cue cards. Like nothing really made sense. It really wasn't consistent. Yeah. And the only time I laugh, but only because it was uncomfortable and that was funny to me, was when she sprayed the green spray paint and just stared at RuPaul.
Just because she licked the paint.
That I did not appreciate. No. That I did not like. The spraying part, funny to me. The in the mouth part, no.
It was a lot. And like the thing that bothers me the most after everything was the voice. I was like, I had no idea that he was a rugged Southerner. Like this was, he was like, environment. I have an environment, right? Here's another environment. I was like, what? It made no sense. And I just loved the idea of Gottmik as Paris Hilton being the Bob Ross super fan, just being like, no, honey, this is not it.
It is so, like, I'm going to keep saying physicality. It's the word of the podcast, but just the physicality of her being like, environment, like, it's like, how,
like, who is that? What is that? Oh, what is that?
I agree with the part that you talked about, Liotta, where he's just spraying and just staring at RuPaul. Like, I died. I was like, you think that this is so funny, but this is so bad, but this is so funny.
Yes. 100%. Oh my gosh.
I often feel like Utica would be better served. I know this is going to sound weird given what the concept of the show is. I think Utica would be better served on a show like Dragula than Drag Race, where they really love people who have very outside of the box, like, opinions and perceptions of drag and that kind of thing. She doesn't really have the horror filth side of drag, and I don't know if that would ever be anything she would go into. I have a feeling she wouldn't, but there's,
she's like the like kids version of Dragula, whatever that looks like, the PBS version, you know what I mean?
Oh my god, now I'm just imagining the Boulay brothers like doing a kid's show, and it's like so not it, but at the same time amazing. I think, yeah, this is the second time that there's been an acting challenge where she's just like been funny for herself but not for other people. And I think I can identify with that a lot. Like, growing up, like, that was me as a kid. Like, I was like, I'm friggin' funny, and these kids just don't get it. And it's just like, no, you're a weirdo, Beth. But it's okay. Like, you're gonna be able to channel that and figure out, like, what is the best way to do that. I still have, like, my weird tendencies. I don't think Utica's figured that out yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I hope the paint was edible. I'm pretty sure it was probably, like, edible paint.
Oh, God, I freaking hope so. Like, otherwise... rush her to the hospital.
She's on the runway later. I'm like, I don't feel great.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, ultimately, we'll get the results of the judging, and Utica will end up in the bottom for her weird Bob Ross performance. But let's first talk about the runway looks here. So let me go ahead. If you are watching the video version of the stream on the Rob Has a Podcast YouTube page, you can take a look at the runway looks for this week. So the category is fascinating fascinators. So that's what we have to discuss on this day. And we're going to start with Olivia Lux, who was a mad scientist, apparently. It took me a long time to figure it out. But that's what she's going as. Amon, what did you think about Olivia's look?
In Dexter's laboratory.
Yes. Oh, I was going to make that reference. I'm so happy you did.
As far as the look goes, I mean, the 90s cartoon kid in me is like living for the Dexter's Lab reference. The Fascinator is interesting as well. It kind of feels like it's like a big mercury spill on top of her head. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, it's if the Fascinator is supposed to be the centerpiece, I feel like I was more inclined to look at what she was wearing than the Fascinator. Mm-hmm. But the Fascinator is still, you know, very visually appealing as well. So I think it's a fine look.
Mm-hmm. Beth, what about you?
I didn't really like this, to be honest with you. I don't think the Fascinator goes with the outfit, like, at all. It's just, I don't even know an outfit that would go with. So it's just really hard to, I appreciate that this is a different look for her. I don't know. There's just something that's not connecting for me. I really like the boots and the trench dress and the gloves and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to the Fascinator, I wish that at least there was a little bit more storytelling as to, like, what's going on with her acting on the runway.
Yeah, I mean, the physicality of the outfit was good as kind of like this evil scientist thing. But yeah, I didn't even know that it was supposed to be a Mercury spill until Amon pointed it out. I had absolutely no idea what her headpiece was and how it related to science at all whatsoever. Like, do something similar to what Denali had done with like a beaker or something like that. So
yeah, that would have been,
You know what this looks like to me? And I actually really wish that now that I'm thinking about this, like I really wish that this is what she would have gone with and said. If this was gold, it would have been a really cool thing to play Daenerys Targaryen's brother in the first season getting the gold.
Poured on him.
That would have been a really fierce kind of outfit to like pay reference to that particular. What was it? I can't think of his name now because he's such a non-entity. But first season, brother, dude.
That guy.
That guy.
Yeah. Blondie Golden McBlonderson. Guy. Yeah. Okay.
Very.
All right. So let's talk about Rosé, who, as we hear, I'm so happy that Michelle finally mentioned it, of you love a good ruffle moment, Beth, because we have Rosé coming in, ruffles head to toe.
Yeah. No, I'm happy that she mentioned it. I feel like this is the first and only time it works for Rosé that I've been actually happy with the outfit. One thing that Michelle said that I didn't agree with is that she said, normally you're covering your neck or something in this outfit. You're not, but like, this doesn't expose her neck. This does still cover it, even though
from the side at one specific angle. Yes. You can see her neck.
Correct. Yes. And she's never on that side on the camera. Yes. So, I like this. I love the thorns. I like the attention to detail. I like the play on her name.
Wait, where are the thorns?
So they're the like little metal spikes on her.
Oh, her belts.
And her belt, like in that area. And then they're also on her gloves.
I did as well. Notice.
Yeah, I thought that those were really cool. And I wish that maybe they'd been painted black so they would have stood out a little bit more. But I think this is a really cool look. It's not my favorite one for this runway, but I give her props for the fun play on her name.
So for me, Amon, I was like, I love the flower thing when she tilts it down, but then is all of you a flower? Shouldn't the rest of you be the stem?
I felt the same way. I wish that, because she posted a picture of herself in this outfit and she's laying amongst a bunch of string balloons, green string balloons, like as if, they're all the stems. I'm like, yeah, there it is. That's the look. Like, where was that? but I mean, with that being said, I mean, she still looks beautiful, but like, I agree. I think that there is just missing a little drama. It's missing a little bit more of the rose of it all. I mean, the fascinator itself is great. I love the fact that she starts off with her head tilted down and then she lifts up and it's like a whole like, ooh, moment. I do like that. And I do agree with Michelle that because of the fact that we can see more of her body, we can see some of the skin, it really does elevated a bit more as opposed to being swallowed up by all of the ruffles.
Right. I love this. Love, 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 love. Am obsessed. Would purchase 10 times over from the head up. I just feel like it was such a missed opportunity to not do something plainer with more of the flower narrative, because that's the whole thing, Amon, is like she tilts her head down. She's a flower. Be a freaking flower with your little stem arms. You can still make it couture and chic just because you're not the ruffle color. Like you're going to be a green color, but you can still be like with the thorns, you can make that very gorgeous, I think. So that's for me, I think would have made this just like top tier. It's still gorgeous, but like
pieces of the illusion are missing.
Yes, exactly.
Either that or the ruffles that are on the dress, if they'd been formed more into roses so she'd look like a bouquet of roses, that would have been fine too. Like but the fact is it just looks like a whole bunch of ruffles. It doesn't look like a bouquet of flowers.
Yes.
I think that's probably what she was trying to go for, but
okay that makes sense. She still looks fabulous and I still love her, but still. Okay, now Utica Queen went ahead and went to a picnic, and T.S. Madison talking about the ants going up her leg made me so happy, Beth. What did you think about Utica's look?
I thought this was okay. I don't think this is a fascinator. I think this is just a picnic basket on her head. So like for me, it doesn't read as fulfilling the challenge. But I like the concept. I like the ants. We know that she likes to play with clashing or contrasting patterns. I'm happy that we see some of that here. I love, she has done kind of a bob or a short wig multiple times. So I wish that we would see something a little different. But I guess for this case, it was just to make sure that the fascinator was the main focus. But I'm not mad at this outfit, but I'm not like throwing dollar bills at the stage for it.
Mm-hmm. Amana, what about you?
I like the hand basket fascinator. I like the beads coming out. I especially love the ants going up the leg. I mean, as a whole, I mean, it really is just what, like a, you know, what would you call that? What she's wearing, like a little bit of a bodysuit cut off at the hips with like the kind of like the chaps thing going on. Like, it's really not that interesting as like a whole, but what she, it's the details, right? It's the devil is always in the details when it comes to Utica. So I appreciate, I appreciate the formation of the ants, what she used to make them out of, and all of that. So if this were, I mean, yeah, I think that this is a good look for it to be more about the fascinator. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. As opposed to, because if this were any other category, it'd kind of be like, this is kind of safe. But I think the fascinator is supposed to be the focal point here. And I liked what she did with it. And then she added some ants at the bottom, which, you know, gives it a little bit more layer.
Yeah, like she's the picnic blanket. And then the basket's on top. I wish the basket were bigger, but also I need her to not have long-term neck problems. So
I don't know how they keep those things up like that. Like, goodness magic. Gracious.
Oops, magic indeed. Okay, let's go and talk about, I think, the runway look that everyone is talking about. And of course, we're going to have our comments as well. And that is Simone's look on the runway. Amon, what did you think about this look?
All right. So, I mean, at first when she walked out, I was like, okay, I mean, it's pretty, like, not really sure, you know, what she's kind of going for here, but I mean, it's okay. And then she turns around and you see the phrase, see the bullet holes. And even I tweeted this out. I was like, even in that 20 seconds when, I saw that, it did hit me in the stomach. And yeah, like, I mean, this is just a perfect way to use your platform to remind everybody what's going on in the real world. And I think that the timing of the Snatch Game with this particular runway was good, because, you know, she kind of had fun with the Harriet Tubman, but then brought it back to reality. And like, look, like, we're a long way from Harriet Tubman, but we still have a lot of work to do. And so I thought, I mean, especially with the hands up as well, I thought, you know, I thought it was quaint. I think a lot of people expected her to be in the top because of this. And while I think that this message is beautiful and absolutely necessary, I still think that her Snatch Game was ultimately what brought her down here. Mm-hmm. So that's the reasoning that I have here. But I think that this look was fantastic.
Yeah, I had the exact same reaction as you, Amon. So I was actually watching with a friend of mine, and we're, you know, we're always like making our own, we're thinking we're so freaking funny, making our own little commentary. And so she first walks out, I see the hat, and I'm like, ah, she's the chic Pope, you know, we're kind of laughing. And then she turns around, and we're both just like, oh, like, now I feel bad for every Pope joke I made, because like, I'm so happy that she chose to do this. I'm so happy that the bullet holes especially, I think, are just such a poignant part of the whole look, not just to have to say their names. And then the way to do it with the way that it looks like blood. I mean, wow. In the back, exactly. And so not only for, because it was in the back for like obvious reasons, but then to be able to have the reveal too. So like, it just, the whole thing just fit. It worked for me. Loved this. I love a queen who is willing to use her platform to say the things that need to be said and to get us having these conversations and to remind us of this. And I think, you know, when did they film this? In end of the summer?
Yes.
I think so.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously at the time they recorded, like, it's sort of on the, I don't know, maybe like tail end ish of a lot of the protests that were going on. So it's kind of nice to then bring it back here several months later to remind us all of what we're going through and the work that needs to be done. So I'm just so happy with Simone this week because of the look. And I think that is part of the reason why I thought she should have been the top. But in retrospect, given the fact that it's Snatch Game, that's the name of the game. I get the judging decision.
Definitely. This was when she first came out, my first thought was like, oh, she's going to a royal wedding and, upstaging mm-hmm. the bride. I love this because that's very like, those are the kind of fascinators you're seeing at all those different kind of royal weddings and such. I'm like, okay, I love that. And I loved the hip shape. It's not a traditional yeah. hip shape. And for mm-hmm. someone with her, thinner body type, like I thought this was kind of like a cool structured look. I thought this was like nice and sleek and just very up Simone's alley, just taking something, kind of fashion, but like putting her own little tweak on it. And then when she turned around, I watched this with a few of my friends and everybody kind of just like similar to you, Liana, makes their comments or is just generally talking like while the episode is on, everyone went dead silent.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, I can't add anything more that Iman and Liana have already said here, but just incredibly important. I'm really happy that RuPaul called it out too before Simone was able to go to the Untuck Lounge. But this is the kind of thing that drag is meant for. It's to be mm-hmm. political. It's to draw attention to the things that are unjust and inequitable in our society. It's to take a temperature of what's happening in the moment and put it and infuse it into art. So mm-hmm. I'm happy that we were able to see something like this. And Simone has done this all season. Yes, this is mm-hmm. probably the most poignant one, but by having a do-rag as a train, by having all of these beautiful references to both masculine and feminine Black culture, putting mm-hmm. them up on the main stage and elevating them so that they are critiqued as among the best of what's happening, that is inherently important and powerful as well, and gives the representation, the validation to Black people, Black culture that is frankly missing on so many different other platforms and shows.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
All the snaps to Simone.
All snaps. Although I will say all the snaps did end up going to Gottmik as Gottmik comes out one in a safety pin look, got a little snap there, but then also, of course, as the winner of this week's challenge. So Iman, what did you think about Gottmik's look?
Definitely. It's shocking. It's in your face. It's out there. Once again, it's like this look. I mean, she walked around that runway and she pretty much just followed up with the mini challenge. She was like, hey, Rue, remember the 80s? I love the fact that the blood drop was made from Swarovski crystals. I'm a whore for Swarovski kind of type stuff. Big ass clipped through her head. Like I thought this was a lot of fun. And, she's somebody that really understands fashion and how to throw things together. And I like the fact that she was having so much fun because this is, like she said, this is Gottmik. I'm getting to wear my face again. Like you guys haven't seen it in a bit. And I'm living for this. I love this. And you could tell. And I think that's ultimately why she won. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, Beth, the only thing I wish is that it wasn't flopping over so much. That was the only critique really that I had here.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Totally agree. One thing that I thought was like, it's just like an understated detail, but just the heel on the shoe, on the boot is so cool. It's so pointed. Also looks like another needle, like just like those attention to details that we've come to expect from Gottmik with fashion on the runway. I appreciate seeing it. We can obviously see her references being these incredible, strong punk musicians and, from the 70s and 80s. And it's really kind of fun to see her in her element coming up on the stage with her traditional makeup and just putting her own spin on everything. So I love this. I thought this was really cool. It was really unique. And I totally agree. It's just unfortunate the safety pin just weighed a little bit too much.
Yeah. Okay, next queen to talk about is Denali, who finally came out in skates, but of her own decision making, not being forced out here in some ice skates. She got to come out here in rollerblades, which I love. I loved rollerblading as a child. So for me, this look, I didn't even care about the rest of the look. I was just so like the rollerblading challenge, the runway that they did in roller skates.
In season 8.
Yeah, still one of my favorites, even though it was a disaster. Here, Denali, clearly consummate pro, and is able to take that and then, of course, incorporate the rest of the look with like serving the food and the coffee and all of this. Just really cute. I don't know if I would say like, oh my gosh, gag, amazing. Yes, mama, but I liked it. I love the roller skates. So I was definitely here for this, Beth.
Yeah, me too. This is one where like the picnic basket was just a picnic basket on the head, right? In my opinion. This is like a little bit more elevated because it's like, how the hell is the coffee pot staying up? Like you have like mm-hmm. those moments where you're mm-hmm. like, oh my gosh, it's defying gravity and like all the cute wicked. But it's really, it's whimsical and fun, right? Mm-hmm. I agree with the judges that if it wasn't for that and the skating, this would just be, yes. you know, a costume. But what I also like about this is that it's such a short skirt that it, in the tights, make it an ice skating outfit as well, which is referenced as well with this. The rollerblades are meant to look like ice skates. So it's mm-hmm. like she's tying in her background with ice skating in addition to actually just skating on the runway, in addition to doing this other look. So I like right. the layers of this for her. Not my favorite thing in the whole world, but I did like the fascinator and the fact that she's playing up those different aspects.
Yeah. I agree. I think that the actual coffee, when they zoomed up on the fascinator during the critique, I think I could see the liquid actually moving within in the mug, which I thought was really cool. Maybe I'm just being a greedy bottom, but I would have loved if she could have got more space on her head and put what she had in her hand on her head as well, and then just had like a regular old platter to carry, because that would have really just like. That would have been like, wow, did she do that? How'd she get all of that up there? That would have like really just pushed it over the edge for me. But I think that this still the way that it is now is really, really cool too.
Oh, like if she had a hook or something up there and she could have like hooked it up there also. Mm-hmm. I don't know how. Yeah.
And then just like done a couple spins or like that would have been, I would have loved that.
See, it reminds me, I swear I'm just going to be talking about Trixie today, but when Trixie did that Red for Filth outfit and she brought the apple off at the end and everyone was like, whoa, like how did you balance the apple on? Like just like having something similar to that, I think would have been really cool. I totally agree. Because that is like of a shape that you could put right on your head. She's holding it upside down.
And it's a basket. There's the little basket. Just, you know, get it up there. Get it up there. Okay. So Elia with two T's apparently a flamingo. Okay. Literally, Beth, I was like thinking about how I was going to introduce Elia with two T's. You're and welcome. My idea was, so I hated this. Amon, thoughts?
It's supposed to be about the fascinator, but I can't stop looking at that burlap sack on her left leg.
Is it a flamingo?
That's what Michelle Visage said, but like, even if she were like, okay, if she was trying to create the illusion of a one-legged flamingo.
No.
Where's the other? No, they're supposed, like, you're still supposed to see the pink leg in the back that you're standing on. And then the other one that's lift it up, but there's just one leg.
This is what a flamingo looks like.
Also, okay, but here's the other thing too, right? If you're gonna do one leg, don't make the other leg a nude palazzo pants. You need it to be like a skinny jean or something that is skinny, because flamingos' legs are infamously skinny. Also, they have backwards knees. So, like, do something physical that tries to make it actually seem like you're being a flamingo. I think, like, she kind of knew the concept of it, but then she rolled with it. Then when Michelle said, you're trying to be a flamingo, right? She was like, yeah.
I think they're flowers. I don't even think they're feathers on her.
Oh, the only feathers I see are on her head. As a fascinator,
I'm like 95% sure these look like flower petals to me.
Also, I'm gonna
what is this? What is this? What is this?
It's bad.
I hate it.
Also, are you just not going to wear lipstick today? Like, what's happening?
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to do a fuller lip. If you're trying to be a flamingo, you're not going to try to do a beak. You're not going to do...
I don't think she was supposed to be a flamingo.
I don't either. I think Michelle said it and she glammed onto it. Like, that's what I am. I'm a flamingo.
Didn't that happen at one point in time during this season? Was it this season or was it UK? There's so much freaking Drag Race going on in my life right now.
It was the Poison Ivy reference with Joey.
Okay, so maybe Elliot learned something from Joey and was like,
but my favorite part is the reason why I know that she just grabbed onto that concept is when it comes to Untucked, they literally go, what did you say about that? And just like, she immediately got that I was a flamingo, but the way she said it was like, not it was like, I need to make sure I have a point of saying this on camera so it makes it seem like I had this planned. Like, I don't buy it. I think this was the worst outfit on the runway. And if she already was kind of, maybe is she going to be on the bottom? Which we knew she was going to be. This is some shit for me.
Yeah. Whatever. Okay, moving on. Another outfit I hated. Tina Burner's look this week. So the horse head is on a saddle, which is on her head. Is she the horse? Is she the jockey? Why is there a saddle there? Just be the horse head if you're going to be a horse. But then she had the riding crop like she was a jockey. And it's ugly. So like, these two back to back really just got me going, Beth.
I don't know what is going on with her. What is going on? What is going on? It's ugly.
Also, why are you painting like my aunt? Like, I don't, it's just like, it's a whole bunch of really confusing parts together. Those boots are ugly. Like, I just, like, there's nothing redeemable about this. Like, from head to toe. I don't get it. Girl, you were lucky that you were just the most bland Richard Simmons and there were other people who did worse than you.
And the way that she and Candy
are backstage going, oh, look at us. We were in the bottom last week, but you know, we're killing it. And I was like, you guys are delusional. My goodness. Oh God. I don't know. I hope that there's like some kind of wake up call soon for both her and Candy. Cause out of the Mean Girls, like they're the ones that just seem to have this really elevated sense of like how they're doing in the competition comparatively. And I'm like, you guys are skating by. Not Denali, who is literally skating by. Like you were actually skating by in this competition, and your time is probably up relatively soon.
Yeah, I just like take this outfit and take it to the glue factory because I am not having it. I'm over it. It's ugly and I hate it. And that's all I have to say. I have no constructive criticism here. So in the effort of if you have nothing nice to say, say what you feel. I feel like I hate it. Okay. Moving on. Candy Muse. So, Beth, you seem to indicate you had feelings about this. Look, what are they?
First of all, this fascinator. I know it says Muse, but I didn't get that for like 10 minutes because she kept moving around and such. It just looked like the most like wimpy looking feathers. It doesn't go with this outfit. Like, I don't really like the dress. This is not a runway as a follow-up to you should have gone home in the last episode. I'm going to cement my place in the competition.
If anything, this is the runway that, like, even if you're getting, like, if RuPaul was trying to make a decision of whether or not he wanted to save you, and he was like, hold up, what's next week? Oh, that's what she brought for next week? All right, send her home. Like,
I mean, but seriously, like, I didn't like the Snatch Game performance. It wasn't Patrick at all. Following up with this, like, I genuinely think that she should have been in the bottom. And over, like, even Olivia, to be honest with you. I know that might be controversial to say, and I think a lot of people are just like, oh, Beth doesn't like Candy Muse. And that is not true. I just haven't liked her in the competition. I don't think that she's bringing what I know she can bring in this competition. And this is just, for me, I feel like this is like, so what? You spelled out muse and feathers?
This is a phoned it in kind of week for her. I think that she probably assumed that she'd be doing a lot better at the competition at this point and just figured I'll probably be able to glide by on this look, which, I mean, I guess she was proven right. But I mean, the fascinator really is, I mean, first of all, the muse looks like a third grader wrote it. Like, it's just not, it's poorly constructed. And then when you turn around,
structure.
Exactly. When you turn around, it's like, I mean, then it's ugly. And then it's like muse backwards. Like, there's no, like, if I were her, I wouldn't turn around. I would walk out on the runway, walk from side to side, and then walk backwards off the runway.
Do a Miss Vanjie backwards.
Exactly.
Miss Candy.
Because it just looks even worse backwards.
Oh, God.
I love you, Candy. Candy, I have been your champion this entire time, but like, this was not your week. It just really wasn't. You were able to get by, and I'm hoping that you could bring it next week, but this was not your week, girl.
I will say, I love that lipstick color on her, though. It looks so good.
Yeah, her makeup looks gorge.
Yeah.
I don't hate the look, but I can't even see the headpiece. So if the theme of the week is headpiece, fascinating fascinators, I am not fascinated by this. But
nope.
I do think that part of that has to do with the set and what's around. So if you look at the first picture, there's all the beads and such. And so that's where your eyes are going to go to. And you're going, where's the fascinator? When she comes out a little bit farther out and there's more of a blue background and not so much that's busy, it's easier to see. But
yes,
and that's not something that you really think about until like you're on the runway. So I credit her a little bit with that. But at the same time, girl, there's no structure in those feathers. Like, it looks like you took some feathers that you got off the side of the road and went, here we go.
Yeah, I couldn't even see it at first because of the beads, which even the picture, I tried to get a close up of the headpiece and like, you still can't even really see it. It reminds me a little bit of like Ginger Minj when she did the lights on the runway.
Yes.
You couldn't see it at all. Cool concept.
But then half of them weren't working.
Well, yeah, but that's the same thing with this, where it's like, okay, yeah, she's disadvantaged by the fact that the background doesn't make it stand out. But at the same time, there's all these other issues with it as well. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is what it is. She's safe because we end up with Simone, Candy, and Tina that all end up as safe with Denali, Rosé, and Gottmik all in the top. Gottmik is our winner this week, which we've discussed at length. And then in the bottom, Miss Olivia, but she be safe because Utica and Elliot are going to be the two queens to lip sync against one another here. So song was, what was it? Fascinated by Company B.
Mm-hmm.
And Elliot just looked like she had given up Amon. I really felt like I saw nothing behind the eyes.
Yep. This is her second time on the bottom. The double Shantae had already happened. So, mm-hmm. This was Olivia's. Not Olivia, Utica's.
Yeah. Oh, Utica. Mm-hmm.
This is her first time in the bottom. Was it first time in the bottom?
Yes, her first time in the bottom. Yeah.
Her first time in the bottom, too. So it just wasn't. I feel like she just knew it was in the cards for her. And I feel like she kind of felt that way during the runway as well. Like, when she came out, she didn't really seem to have that usual like swagger that she usually did. She kind of just seemed a little down. So, I mean, I don't know what was going on with her this week. I mean, I know that she says that she struggles with depression. So I'm not about to sit here and, you know, completely bash the girl, but it wasn't her week. It just wasn't. The runway look was not strong. The choice for the character at Snatch Game was just not strong. The execution was bad. It just was just not her week. So I felt like she felt like it was her time. And we've seen what she's done on during the lip syncs before, and she absolutely turned it out. So I know that she was capable of giving more than what she did, but I guess she just didn't have it that day.
Mm-hmm. This is a pressure cooker of a competition. I mean, they always say, you know, last week I did blah, blah, blah. There are no weeks in between. These are days. They are put into a competition.
What is it, like 3-day cycles? Everybody's going to go swim every 3 days?
Is, every 3 days. Like, it is, it's like Survivor in that sense, I guess. But it's, this is a hard competition. And I was listening to one of Bob the Drag Queen's podcasts where he had Peppermint on, and they were talking about UK Drag Race with Tia Coffey going home a couple weeks ago. And Peppermint's like, you could just see that Tia and her lip sync was done and was kind of done getting their critiques and kind of knew it was her time. And there were all these different aspects to it. And in this situation, like, I kind of feel like it's the same thing. Elliot clearly wasn't making the bonds behind the stage. I'm sure that there was, it was much harder for her with any of her mental health issues, on top of the fact that she might have been being held accountable for maybe some of the microaggressions she might, you know, allegedly have been saying and such. So I think that there's a lot going on mentally here. And whether or not she knows that that's affecting her, that is something that can present itself in how you do in a competition.
Yeah, absolutely. The time I most felt like I understood her was in Untucked when she was like, I just want a Crunchwrap Supreme. And I was like, me too.
As well.
Yes.
I think I'll get one right after this podcast.
Right. I as much as we give Elliot Matutis crap, it's tough what she's struggling with. And I think though that it was her time to go.
Yeah,
I think she knew it. We knew it. The judges knew it, you know, and I'm hoping that she's able to learn something from her experience. And if she's going to be a freaking flamingo, be a flamingo. That's all I have to say.
I think that she's somebody that I'm really excited to see what happens with this platform, because she does good drag. Like her outfits were not bad, except for this one. I really do think that she's somebody that is going to be able to use this platform and refine herself both personally and in her art. So I'm interested to see what happens with her afterwards.
All right. So we're already running a little on the long side. Is there anything from Untucked? I mentioned, of course, my favorite moment, the Crunchwrap Supreme moment. Otherwise, we'll jump on into the COVID special.
I love that T.S. Madison came back and gave them a bit of a pep talk. I love that. If what we're assuming about Elliot with two teams is correct, and she was kind of just out of it during this week, I love that T.S. Madison telling her that she thought that she was a well put together queen, that she held on to that. I love that. I love when people get to hear nice things about themselves from people that they respect. I think that's really special. The whole thing with Utica, very interesting. Like, what's going on, girl? Like, are you shady? Like, what's going on? This comedian that I follow, Ray Sani on Twitter, she said something pretty funny about it. She was like, I think all of these girls getting on her for being shady, like, I hope that she is as shady, because some of these girls have been the shadiest of them all. So if Utica wants to get in on the shades every now and then, I hope that she does. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I kind of agree. If Utica's going to be like this, then at least own it, girl. So like, if you're being shady, then don't, you know, I mean, I can kind of sympathize with what she was going through, because she was like, I kind of struggle with who to be because I am kind of a more reserved kind of personality, but I've kind of, you know, had to come out of my shell during the competition. So sometimes I don't really know how to turn it on and off for RuPaul, for the cameras, for the girls. Like, so sometimes it kind of, this duality sort of like begins to manifest, and I think that we all have an experience with that. But at the same time, girl, like, don't say something rude to one person and then flip it when you get, like, if you get caught, just be like, you know what, girl, I did say that, my bad. Like, just own it. So I thought that was very interesting to see.
It was also interesting, the fact that it was coming from Olivia, who, like, Olivia, you have fully screwed over Utica in challenges by being your shady diva self.
That's true.
Like, clearly these two are having a nice off while being shady at the same time. Here's the thing. Competition is going to bring out the shadiness, and this is something we're going to talk about with UK for sure for this latest episode. But I think that this is an important part to realize, that, like, who somebody is in a competition reality show, yes, that is a shade of who they are, but that is not necessarily who they are professionally all the time or personally all the time. It's important to remember that there's a lot of aspects that you're trying to balance, and like, who's my audience and how do I act and perform for that audience at any given moment? It's something that we all struggle with. So I can definitely sympathize with Utica.
Absolutely. Okay, so next week we are going to have the makeover challenge, where they're going to make over each other. I have no idea how this is going to work, but I'm fascinated to find out. So very, very much looking forward to this. So now let's go back in time a little bit and talk about the COVID special. So I'm just going to hand this over to Beth. Beth, go, please. Thoughts. Thank you.
Okay, so my whole thing with the COVID episode was like they filmed it as if we were 10 years in the future and we're looking back on COVID. And I had a really tough time being like, yeah, like they would basically say things like, oh, you have no idea how hard it was for us to stay home all the time. And I'm like, you mean like how I am currently staying home all the time watching this right now because I have nothing else to do? Like, yeah. So it's an interesting thing that they filmed for historical purposes, but I don't know if now was the time to interrupt in the middle of the season to show it. Like it it was interesting to a certain extent, but it wasn't necessary. I would have much rather just gone on with the season and had this be maybe the episode that comes in between the like last episode before the finale or the reunion or whatever. Like that would have been a more appropriate time to like, let's look back at the whole season. Let's look back of what it was like to film this during COVID. I was happy that we got to see some confessionals from some queens we hadn't seen before, but this was such a weird time in the season to even do this, let alone do it at all.
Yeah, it was so dumb. It was unnecessary. The timing was unnecessary. It did feel very much like erasure of our current status. I learned nothing from it. I would have very much appreciated this to be much later. Like, fine. If you want to air something like this, fine. But don't put it in the middle of the season. It just felt very out of place. I felt like
we would have been better served having something like this for Drag Race UK, where the girls actually had their shit interrupted.
Correct.
And, you know, one of them was homeless during, like, that would have been, like, filming that kind of stuff and talking about their experiences. I would have much preferred to see something like that, but.
Yeah. And they have that, but I don't know if they aired that on the BBC or if it was just, like, an exclusive to watch online. But I totally agree with you, Iman. Like, I found the UK one that was a half an hour long way more interesting than this one. And it was almost like they were, oh, wow, we had to do this for the UK, but like, let's do an hour
long. It seems like a very like Emmy grab moment. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Yes.
It feels like a very like, I'm your mama now moment. It's like, it's not over, bro. We're all still here.
Talking about most cringeworthy moments ever on Drag Race, the I'm your mama now or mother now. Like,
I'm your mama now.
I literally have had a nightmare before where RuPaul just randomly entered, was like, I'm your mother now. I'm like, no! And then I woke up and it was fantastic. I was like, thank God, it was a dream.
And I guarantee you, her and Plastique Tiara have not spoken since the conclusion of season 11.
No. The only thing that was somewhat interesting to me was the way that, knowing the way that they are doing the confessionals, that it's like an iPad instead of an actual producer sitting there. They have to communicate, I guess, through like Skype, Zoom, whatever. Yeah. That to me was only semi-interesting. Not that it changes anything, but I was like, oh, that's a fun little factoid. Great. I'm glad I wasted an hour of my time to learn this one thing.
That could have been a tweet.
That could have been a 30-second clip online.
That didn't even need to be an email. It could have been a tweet.
Look, 280 characters is fine now, right? Okay. Maybe not 160, but we're good. Okay. All right. That's enough of that. If you didn't watch it again, you didn't miss much. Do not go back and rewatch it unless you have ample time on your hands. All righty. Let's jump in to Drag Race UK. So we had two episodes that, if we have any thoughts here and there, we can share them. So the first episode that we missed was the Lockdown Super Sheroes, where they had to do essentially a design challenge and then kind of come up with this superhero persona. Ahura ends up winning that episode and Sister finally goes home. She was my Elliot of two T's of Drag Race UK, like the queen that I'm like, it's been your time for a while. Can you please go home now? And then the next episode after was the, I don't remember what the title was, but it was the stand up comedy special. You know, we've seen this concept before. Yeah, Stoned on the Runway, I think was what it was. Stoned on the Runway.
I think it was called that. And that was also just like the category of the runway.
Of the category. Yeah, exactly. And Ahura, there's like a whole lot of drama there with Ellie Diamond winning the mini challenge and getting to set the order. And so I feel like that episode probably was the more dramatic of the two because we get a lot, we learn a lot about the relationships here. Beth, I hear you like nodding along. I assume you have thoughts about this.
Yeah, specifically with the second episode, with this whole drama with Ellie and Ahura and Lawrence, I just sat back and I was like, Lawrence, you have... Well, actually, let me take a step back further. Tace and Bimini had no issue. I mean, they might have had an issue, but they were also respected the idea that, like, okay, this is a competition. She's trying to set herself up for success, and mm-hmm. you know, she's got to do what she's got to do. What I didn't like is if you felt that way and she's getting attacked, why aren't you defending her? If that's how you feel, if you're, or even just to say, like, hey, I respect the decision. I may not like it, but I'm going to turn it out because at the end of the day, it's all about the set that I do. It doesn't really matter where you are. It matters psychologically. It doesn't matter in the context of like how well you do. And that's like, if Tace can have the attitude knowing that she's going to be going last and isn't a stand-up comedy person and those kind of things, then like, why can't Lawrence, who is a comedy person, and just like, why are you putting me after Bimini? They're supposed to be friends. Like, Lawrence, calm your tits down. Like, this is something that you just, like, you're going to be fine at regardless of wherever you go. I can understand Ahura being upset, but like, get over it. You've been so shady to Ellie, like, for the past like 2-3 weeks at this point. Then like, yeah, let her have her shade in a very perfectly fine sense in the competition. And put you first. You kind of deserve it the way that you've been treating her. And you just won the last challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Step up. Mm-hmm. Sorry. This is the game. Play it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It just felt very, like, what? I get it. It's a pressure cooker. There's going to be a lot of drama. So yeah. I can understand why Lawrence would ultimately be upset. But then the fact that you have the two other queens like Bimini, who is like really, I mean, we've talked about this before, but is now really growing on me. Much like the, her outfit from this week, but gets her another win. Like, so impressed. So impressed.
Yeah. Somebody else said that. One of the other, the drag race girls from the U.S. said that on Twitter earlier today, or not today, but this week. I forget who it was. I feel like was it Bob? No, I forget. Somebody else's. Bimini is growing on bitches is the point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Which, you know, I think when it comes to the win, that like who ultimately is going to win, because like we talked about at the beginning, UK is already at their top freaking four, mm-hmm. right? Because it's Tace, Bimini, Ellie, Diamond, and Lawrence Cheney.
Cheney.
Wow, who would have thought Lawrence Cheney would have made it all the way to the...
I know! God!
Shocker! In these past two episodes, you just saw the favoritism that RuPaul have pop out too, because like there was literally a time in... I can't remember which episode it was, but they were talking, the judges were doing their judging moment, and he was just like, Lawrence just gives you like that. And he's just like smiling as he says, Lawrence just gives you that natural. It's so hard to find. Like, it's amazing. And I was like, yeah, we get it, RuPaul. Mm-hmm. You love your Lawrence. Mm-hmm. Your favorite. Yeah. I think it's interesting. Like, Lawrence is the clear front runner from a RuPaul perspective, but I think that Bimini, is, and I would argue Tace are more of the fan favorites at this point. I like Lawrence a lot. I think Lawrence is very talented, really funny. I'm enjoying the commentary. I think Tace is the better narrator of the season. Mm. And I actually, the other thing I wanted to bring up was the conversation between Tace and Lawrence about Tace's insecurities in love and relationships. And I think that there's a lot that I know I identified with, although my perspective is a little different as someone who identifies on the asexual spectrum. But there's a lot there that I connected with this idea of like, you know, I'm still interested in like a romantic partnership someday, and like and likely a sexual partnership, but whatever. But like how I go about doing that is like going to be very different from other people. And there's a lot of things that I have to question about like myself internally. And I'm not saying that Tace is on the A spectrum. I don't know if she is or not, but there was a lot of things I connected well there. And it was nice to see someone who traditionally I think people would just assume like, oh, there's no problem for someone who's really attractive to mm-hmm. like find a partner or have these insecurities. And it was just kind of nice to be able to connect on that level. And I think it was nice for Lawrence as well, as someone who has admitted to the self-esteem issues that he's suffered because of maybe his weight or being gay or whatever the case is. So just nice to have those kind of moments of connection that kind of, I think, are universal regardless of your identity.
Yeah.
But for me, I think those were like the biggest, like big number things to hit up.
Yeah, completely agree. Okay, so this is our mega-sized episode this week. I believe we have finally chomped off all of the bits. And we will be back next week to talk about Now, I'm not entirely sure how UK is going to proceed now that we are at our top four. I assume we're going to go down like to the top three.
It's because, an actual challenge.
Yeah, for season one. So I assume it's going to be similar to that. So we'll be talking about that episode. And then, of course, the makeover challenge for Drag Race US. All righty, let's get out of here. Amon, where can people find you on social media and what are you up to?
You can find me on Twitter at Amon Adwin. You can also find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/AmonAdwin. I still have my podcast with Matt. We are doing a bunch of character studies and song rankings over at Choir Room Podcast and covering Big Brother Canada 9 over at RHAP. Busy, busy, busy time.
Busy, busy. And Beth, what about you? Where can people find you?
Find me on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram at AugustaWind11. Also on Twitch, twitch.tv/AugustaWind11. On this week, we're going to be doing on My Weekly Meltdown, as per usual, our reactions to the challenge. And now we're doing BB Can. It's my first season ever of watching BB Can, so I'm excited.
Hey. Ah! Welcome to the fold.
Thank you. I was like, as if I needed any more reality shows to sink my teeth into, but I'm excited. I'm also in the process of putting together a new podcast with Dylan, 8-Bit Dylan from Twitch. He's a good friend of mine. So stay tuned with more details coming out in the next couple of weeks about that. But we're going to be discussing two of our favorite shows that have nothing to do with each other, Lost and The Nanny. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay, I'm interested to see what that
how that even
being.
Plays out.
Yeah, I have no idea. I'm interested to see how this turns out. All right, and you can follow me on Twitter at LianaRHAP. Puya and I are going to be back to talk about The Masked Singer. That season starts this week, season 5. Oh my gosh! So we're going to be breaking everything down with the premiere. You can also follow me on Twitch, twitch.tv/LianaIsm. I'm doing a BB Can meets The Sims like mashup thing along with the season where, you know what, sometimes our faves get voted out early, but not in my version on The Sims. So love if you're that. Interested in that, check it out. It's a mess, like most things in my life, but here we are. If you are not a patron of RHAP, consider checking out what we have to offer that allows us to do all of the wonderful things here, including our beautiful faces here for you on the Drag Race podcast. And you can check that out by looking at patreon.com/RHAP or robhaswebsite.com/patreon. Leave your star ratings and reviews for us on iTunes. The easy link for that is robhaswebsite.com/dragrace. Shout out to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes for all of his fabulous work. And we'll talk to y'all next week. Bye.